Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
Hi, welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. I'm Marshall. That's Nick. You can find us at hypercleanstore.com. If you want to support American-made car care, or if you want to come interact, go to the Hyperclean Specialist Group on Facebook. Love to see you there. All right, today, Nick, we're going to dive into some car talk, news, all the stuff going on that we're seeing. And there's quite a bit of first, right? Some things some manufacturers are doing, like for the first in 6 years, 15 years. There's a bunch of different ones, right? First one we're going to start off with is the first time in 6 years. So according to Chevy, they're doing the unthinkable. It's coming. And for 6 years, there's a certain Corvette guy who's been waiting. And the new ZR1 will be released. Woo! Are we ready or what?
I tell you what they've done. And C8 Corvette has been obviously a boom for Chevy. They did a great job with it. They used to just have all these things pretty regularly, but boy, have they played with people on these C8s. Hey, get the Stingray. Well, that's not as good as the Z06. Now all the Z06 owners are going to have the ZR1s coming out, this package. Look, Corvette's played this beautifully, right? I mean, Chevy's played this beautifully. They've essentially, for several years now, made guys continue to upgrade that want to upgrade. So you probably now, if you're looking at this realistically, have guys that bought base models because that was the first they could get, and all the models that came after. You could have guys sitting on, you know, four or five different C8 Corvettes in a very short period of time.
Yeah, definitely. Another first, which is fun, coming out of Kia. Kia has announced their first truck.
Oh, that should be awesome.
Should be wild, yeah? Wild like the name. You ready? Tasmanian.
Oh, that's crazy because I thought it was going to be called Broken. That seems like a more apt name for a Kia. I haven't, you know, I saw some preliminary sketches. Have they actually released an actual final rendition of what this is going to look like?
I don't. The only thing I read about it is that it's supposed to look more like the Ranger. Okay. They have the sister company, or not sister, but I guess like sister by location. And there was the Hyundai Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah, the Santa Cruz in person looks great. I don't know if it's going to work for longer than 10,000 miles and not blow an engine up, but it looks great in person. That market is, you know, Texas, mini trucks are becoming a thing, especially because a lot of mini trucks from the Asian countries are now able for import. Legally in the United States because of the 25-year rule. And Texas said, hey, you can import the mini trucks here legally because there's no safety on these mini trucks. Like, it's essentially like if you get in a wreck in one of these things, you're dead. But, I mean, we grew up with mini trucks, you and I, right? We grew up with small, you know, Rangers and thing, and it just disappeared from the market.
My first truck was an
FN. S10s, right? I mean, and you can go down to the Dodge Dakota. Okay, that was a convertible Dodge Dakota. That was awesome. But when you look at it, abandoning that market as trucks got more popular than ever will go down as one of the strangest decisions in the history of car making, because they basically allowed the Toyota Tacoma, which if anybody remembers early Tacomas, those were as small as they got. Mm-hmm. Remember how small those Tacomas were?
Very tiny.
So then everybody abandoned that, and now it was like, well, the Tacoma got bigger and bigger, and they just had the market all to themselves, essentially. So
yeah, now, will we see this Kia? We're not sure, right?
Yeah, because you don't know. That's going to be available in the Middle East, but not here.
Yeah, they only are saying there's a couple locations because they don't want to pay this 25% tax on importing a truck, and their only location was at Georgia, I think. They said that plant there is already maxed out with everything, being especially this EV that they're releasing too. So
if it's going to get built, it's going to get built in Mexico, because there's a loophole that these automakers have with building them in Mexico, which is where Ford does a lot of stuff, you know, those types of things. it's a perfect spot for Kia and Hyundai to live, right?
Yeah.
Very low cost. You know, obviously you can get some Hyundais now in the Genesis brand that are not so low cost, but it's been abandoned. So yeah. I don't know why nobody's taken up the slack here. It's a really silly business decision by a lot of companies, including Ford and Chevy and everybody.
And it's not just the size, right? Like, just having a vehicle that has lower costs, lower expenses, and you can run around, like, not just the size, it's also the practicality.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And again, if you look at the monstrosity that Tacoma is now, it's like on its way to a full-size truck. So you really have nobody in this space, right? I mean, Ranger kind of is. I saw a Raptor Ranger. You got to be some type of guy to buy a
Raptor Ranger.
A Ranger Raptor.
Ranger Raptor.
Yeah, you got to be some type of dude to be like, you know what? Let's go. Let me go ahead and get the Raptor version of the Ranger. I'm all into it. But still, you kind of look at this, and like you said, footprint. You know, you can park them on your driveway without taking up three quarters of your driveway. You can park them places where you don't have to take up two spots. I mean, you can run down to Home Depot and pick up three. Yeah. You can go back to Home Depot and get three screws and not take your dually. There's a lot of room for these types. And it's just, I mean, it has literally been abandoned in our lifetime. We watched it happen.
Like a 70-year-old man running around on a little grocery getter. I think they'll love that.
Yeah, my grandfather, when he got older, was always into like a Ford Ranger, you know, whatever. I mean, that was a perfect truck for him.
Little old men driving around in these little old trucks, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go get my mulch for my front yard, and then I'm going to have my grandson take it out. And then, you know what I mean? Like, it was a perfect truck. It was really a really stupid decision, especially from the American manufacturers, to just abandon that market. Stupid.
All right, so I'm curious when we're going to see the first. And I hope everybody, if you hear it and if you see it, listen, go to the HyperClean Specialist Group. Like, even if you can't take a picture, just be like, listen, I'm at the Cars and Coffee and I heard it for the first time. Because I think there's going to be a changeover eventually to not how much horsepower do you got over there, buddy, to, well, what size inverter is that? Wild, right? Like, so there's a big race right now in the EV world for who's got the fastest EV. Porsche's saying they've got a new one that they're gone 300 up from 600 amps to now 900, and they're boasting they're gonna have the fastest out there. So there's the wildest thing about that one when I saw the pictures of it. Now, maybe I'm missing something, but the reason why that they've said that they're so fast now is that inverter, but also I think it was like 130 or something pounds less than the current Taycan. So,
cool. I mean, I drove a Taycan today. So here's the best part. Okay, I've said this forever.
This is what I was saying. So there's still on the back doors, there's still handles, but they took the back seats out and put a storage bin. So what are we doing here? Like, that's what I'm saying. Maybe I'm missing something.
This is all for Motor Trend. This is all for these stupid magazine articles that are so outdated. They're so foolish. Obviously, for those that follow cars, there's guys that are at the Hyundai at Laguna Seca this week, and there's guys that are at the BMW event, and they go and write these articles in Car and Driver. And look, man, I'm not banging on these guys, but who gives a shit? Who gives a shit? Like, I can tell you this. I drove a Taycan. And by the way, I had the first Taycan in the U.S., and the thing fried itself at a stoplight. I've told that story here. Today, I had to take a Taycan from a customer's house this morning down to an airport he's going to be picked up at. Okay? I drove it for 30 minutes. And I've driven this car a lot. It's not great. Now, I get it. It handles well. Cool. So does every other Porsche. That's not a benefit of that car. It's the benefit of Porsche. It handles great. Cool. The seating sucks. You're sitting so low to the ground, right? And you're in this electric vehicle, and it sounds like you're driving a Jetsons vehicle. Like, to me, I get it, and I'm an electric car fan. I understand them. I just don't understand what we're racing to do. It's easy to make 1,000 horsepower with an electric engine, or electric battery. Okay, we've already seen that. What are we trying to do here? Have your 16-year-old daughter in a Taycan run into a telephone pole? What exactly are we trying to do here? Nobody's going to be right. I mean, nobody cares about these things.
Listen, 1,000 is just old news. That
it's way old.
BYD, that Chinese company,
yeah,
they say theirs is 1,300. So.
Yeah, oh, great. By the way, I got buddies that have souped-up golf carts you wouldn't believe. I'm not sitting here going, man, this is unbelievable. Like, they're going 45 miles an hour on the golf course. Like, great. I don't see what the point of all this is. And again, nobody's kind of talking about the idiocy of it all. So when people reviewed this Taycan, let me give you the automotive journalist thing. You won't believe the handling on this thing. Have you ever driven a Porsche? You go, man, this thing sucks at handling. Who's ever said that? Nobody's ever. I assumed they were going to figure out how to get the electric vehicle to handle well. I didn't think that was one of the hurdles they had to jump over. What they had to jump over is, how do you make it comfortable to ride in? How do you make the back seats make sense, which in that vehicle make zero sense? That's why they put a storage bin back there, because you can't sit back there.
Yeah.
They got a four-door sedan you can't sit in the back of.
Well, why keep the handles up? Like,
it's stupid.
Because it's a trunk. Oh, okay.
That's the new trunk. I mean, look, man. I am the last guy to sit here and say I don't understand electric cars, right? There's a bunch of people that just talk crazy about, like, you know, I don't want an electric car. Look, if you drive one, they're calming, good to sit in traffic. You don't have the engine sound. You don't realize how soothing it is to ride an electric car till you do like an hour in an electric car in traffic. And you're like, yeah, I can kind of see this. You're a lot more calm. I'm cool with it. There's nothing interesting about them. Let's stop trying to make it interesting. It isn't interesting, because guess what? Your buddy's golf cart is not interesting. I've had Ferrari golf carts and this golf cart. You know what? I looked at them for 2 seconds and gave them a thumbs up and kept walking. There's nothing interesting about them, right? Except for that you're going to have to replace your tires every 5,000 miles. Like, there is nothing interesting about them.
Well, I mean, on the other article I was skimming through, I didn't want to stick too much time on it because I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what you've said. That's what we've talked about, is who's going to buy a used one? You know, there's all these articles yeah, now dude. Coming out about, would you ever buy a used EV? Like, I
They're
don't
dropping
know.
Like a rock. This is why I say one of the best used car values in the world right now is a used Rivian. They're like $150,000 build quality, and you can pick these things up for 60 grand with hardly any miles on them. They're great vehicles, but they don't hold value. You're totally forgetting about the consumer in all this. And also, stop writing about them and talking about them like they're interesting. After 5 minutes of owning your iPhone 15 Pro Max, it's not interesting anymore. And that's what it is in the car world. It's an electronic. I don't hate on it. I don't say they shouldn't exist. I just say, let's stop all this nonsense. And the people to blame are these automotive guys that have a following that are trying to be on the front end of this wave, and the wave's already crashed. And they want to convince you that you're the idiot. That's like somebody telling you inflation's not real when you're at the grocery store and you're like, damn, this shit costs a lot. It's right. Like, dude, what are you talking about? I know that my groceries cost me $200 more a week. Like, I'm not an idiot.
Grabbed some steak and some wine and some coffee. $103.
Yeah. Don't tell me inflation's not happening. Like, okay. I sent a text to Mildred, and I go, boy, of all the people I see complaining about gas, check this out. You know what it cost me to fill up my truck? $140 out here. You want to tell me inflation isn't happening? It's five something a gallon out here. I'm not complaining about it, but I'm just telling people.
Posted in the specialist group $1.60.
Well, I think that's like, a liter. I think those guys are. I think those guys are in liter.
Like, yeah, who the hell's got that? Oklahoma hasn't seen $1.60 in a long time. So if we haven't seen it,
by the way, in Oklahoma, natural gas is expensive for your car.
That's what we looked at. Yeah. When you were here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I say this as, you know, and I'm just using it as an example. Like I can look with my own two eyes and realize things have gone up in price when a Big Mac meal is $15. I mean, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to tell me that inflation, you know, oh, you just don't get it. No, I get it. I'm paying more. It's okay. There's no argument. It's the same with electric cars, right? It's like, guys, we're seeing the resale value drop like a rock. We're seeing Tesla drop new car prices 15 G's at a clip. We see the collapse happening. We see car companies backing out of electric vehicles. Don't tell me that I don't, my eyes and my ears are not picking up on what's happening. I just don't get it. There's some things in life I just don't get. You're right. I'm not smart enough to understand the physics of everything in the world. But when I see the prices with my own two eyes, you can't tell me that I'm not seeing what I'm seeing. That's crazy.
All right. So let's talk about why people aren't buying as many new cars. Is it they don't like the way they look? Or is it that inflation? Let's talk about looks for a second. And let's bring up a certain brand and a certain vehicle that you're in admiration for how many models and sizes and all this other stuff.
Don't get me started, Marty.
Trim lines, you absolutely love it. Like I think I had to talk you off the ledge of trying to buy one just about an hour ago. Like, just because Toyota finally got what they've always wanted, let's be real. They always wanted this 2024 Motor Trend Car of the Year. And for the first time, let's go ahead and say it because it's real. For the first time, Prius is the Motor Trend Car of the Year. Prius.
You got to be kidding me.
That's what I read. Now, maybe I misread, but the article was specifically about how crazy it was after so many years. Prius is now the Motor Trend Car of the Year. So then Toyota goes and does something also that's awesome they haven't done in 15 years. And that is change the 4Runner. Listen, I always wanted a 4Runner.
For all of you that have a Motor Trend subscription, you realize you're the idiot in the room.
I don't have a Motor Trend
subscription. You got to cancel that. If that's true, you should never read that again. That's the craziest. Come on, man. Like...
Okay,
car plus
the 4Runner, all right? 4Runner back in the day was an admiration for me. As we had this joke before, you don't like convertible tops. To me, to have an SUV that has a convertible top or removable top, let's go there, you know, it was the Blazers, those big Blazers that I had a buddy that had one, but then also the 4Runner.
Yeah.
And some people are like, wait, 4Runner had a removable top? Absolutely. I will always remember the 4Runner removable top because it caused my very first wreck. That's one of these wrecks where you go, I'm not sure how I'm still here.
Yeah.
But it was this 4Runner that was sitting on some Mickeys, and it was at the stoplight, which isn't too far from where we're at now, because I was headed to church down Mingo, and they would sit in front of this gas station, and it was for sale. And I was rolling in my little S10 that I wasn't real happy about. And this 4Runner sitting on some Mickeys with a couple inch lift had his top off sitting out in front of this gas station. I'd seen it without his top off, but this time it had his top off. And I looked a little too long. So then my buddy in the passenger seat goes, Marty! Sure enough, there's a red light. And I don't know how I didn't smash into this truck, but I narrowly missed it. Listen, 4Runner to me has always been, and then one of your favorite, absolute favorites, right? What's the year? And I agree.
The 96 Limited was one of those vehicles, if you had in your neighborhood, it looked awesome. It had the two-tone, right? Like it was basically like cream on gray, you know, an off-white. What we didn't know at the time is it was oxidized white. It was a Toyota. It had gold trim. You know, it had gold emblems and stuff like that. It was, at the time, a special vehicle.
I remember the seats and
feel.
Like, it was set apart. I had some friends, I had some buddies, you know, that had some, and you'd sit in them, and you'd, that push button, they'd pull it back, and you're just like, okay, like this.
Yeah, I mean, because at the same time, they had, I think, the 40th anniversary Land Cruiser. that was a step above the Forerunner that is now iconic. So in that time frame for me, that 96, 97 area, it's never, ever returned to that. It's for me, gotten progressively worse. And with this announcement and what I saw, I don't know why anybody buys a Forerunner. I don't understand the Forerunner in their lineup. I don't understand how they sell so many of them. Now they got 9 trim packages. 9 trim packages in the Forerunner. And also, let's go ahead and get this out of the way. Toyota has about 4 or 5 different SUVs right around the same price. I don't understand what the hell is going on here. And by the way, let's everybody spare me that you're going to buy the cheap Forerunner. Nobody's buying the cheap base trim Forerunner. Most of you guys listening aren't. Everybody's buying what, Marty? Go ahead and say it, because I know you love it. Go ahead and say it. The TRD Pro.
TRD Sport.
Yes. TRD Pro Plus. Pro. TRD yeah, Pro sport. This. Yeah, TRD this. I think they might have a TRD Sport. Who the hell knows? Then they got a Trail, you know, Hawk and Trail Knight and Trail this and Trail that. And they got a Platinum and they got a Limited and they got, it's like, and then.
What's your deal with TRD? What's wrong with the TRD? That's what you caught me for a second. I was like, what are you talking about? It's like, oh yeah, because listen, I had a TRD Tacoma. Loved it. Loved the little badge right there on the, actually I didn't. I thought about it that time, even back then, how can I wheel this off? Or I was like,
I got news for
TRD
you.
TRD means something. So I kept it on there.
By the way, you can't take them off now. They're stamped into the back. Okay, non-removable, and they paint them black. Man, that looks badass, dude. They paint them black. It's horrible. I mean, like I said, man, I just had a brand new 4Runner as a rental car for weeks. It is too cramped. I mean, if you're 5'9 and below, I think the 4Runner probably is cool. If you're 5'9 and above, you're like, this thing is cramped. It doesn't ride right. It doesn't sit right.
Is that not always been what's with the 4Runner? You're always a little bit closer than some of the other SUVs?
No, because if you go back to that 96 era, that was a pretty roomy, luxurious feeling, right? Because the seats kind of sat back. You didn't have this cramped center console. The steering wheel wasn't sitting on your lap. You know, it was a different feeling. And I've thought through the last couple generations, they've lost all of that. Like, you kind of sit high up. You're like, the rake of the front end, like, sits you right on the windshield, which I find really, really odd. And I kind of look at all this and I go, my big gripe, as again, I own a Lexus in my family. I'm a big Toyota fan. The big gripe is that essentially every SUV from them that you would want is going to be somewhere between $58,000 and $70,000. And in that range, you got like 5 different models. You got the Land Cruiser they just released. You got the Lexus TX. You got this. You got that. You got this. You know, you got a Tacoma. You got this. It's like, what is going on here? And guess what? Toyota is much smarter than me because people are lining up to buy these things. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this isn't me saying that Toyota has made some mistake here. If you have 2 brain cells, walk me through why you wouldn't just buy the most luxurious thing at that price point and not buy the 4Runner. I can go buy a GX from Lexus with 5,000 miles on it for the same thing as I buy a 4Runner for.
But so is it hybrid?
Why would I buy the 4Runner?
But is it hybrid? Because the new 4Runner's hybrid.
It's got a high, I mean, so here's the other thing. The V6 and the V8 is the time-tested bulletproof engine that Toyota's had. Okay? Now, these are 4 cylinders. Some come with a hybrid. Some don't. They say, hey, this makes more power. We got turbo in here. We got this. We got, okay, great. But I don't know if it's as bulletproof as the engine you've spent perfecting.
I did not read that. Did you just say the 4Runner's a 4-cylinder?
Yeah, it's all a 4-cylinder. Yeah, I mean, they don't have a V6 or a V8 in these. And by the way, the Toyota Land Cruiser has almost the exact same setup as the 4Runner. It's the same body. It's the same drivetrain, or excuse me, it's a different body, same drivetrain, same everything. Okay, I think there's like a 3-inch difference in the length of the vehicle. That's the only major difference in the vehicle. I why wouldn't I just buy the Land Cruiser? It's got a cooler body. It looks better. It's going to be just as capable. It's going to have the same internals. So now I have two SUVs that are essentially identically priced. Why wouldn't I just buy the Land Cruiser? But then I say this again. For all you Toyota fanboys, why wouldn't I just buy the Lexus? Just buy a 5,000-mile Lexus and get the Lexus experience, which is elevated from the Toyota experience.
Do you think that they're pulling that, like, you know, every 15 to 20 years they go back to the way it used to be? Because now they're trying to bring in – you look at the outside, right, not exactly what I would have picture as a forerunner, but they're going to be like, oh, but we brought in that back rear window that curves over, which is a forerunner trend, and they brag about, hey, we still got the roll down back window.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I'm gonna say something a little different here. So you got 9 trim options in the forerunner, 9, which is insanity. And not one of them has a removable top to actually go back to the start of the 4Runner. When Bronco's huge, Jeep is still huge, you're already got 9 trim models. Hell, what's the 10th one at this point, in my opinion? And I look at this and I just go, I don't know, man. All hail to Toyota because they make a ton of money and people buy these things. But it also shows you how many people don't understand the car market, don't actually look at what's happening, don't look through a brand's lineup and go, something's off here. I can just get a nicer vehicle. And I'll tell everybody this. If you don't keep a Toyota for 250,000 miles, I don't even think it's worth it at all. That's the only reason to buy a Toyota, in my opinion, because the interior's not the nicest in class. The ride's not as the nicest in class, but the durability's there. Right.
All right. So let's
buy a V6 or a V8 Toyota. They last.
There's a certain group that's going to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, but you know what I can do? Listen, I get it. The people are going, hey, this is more like a Tacoma SUV, but there's this Overlander group. They are just pumped now. All the stuff the Overlander guy can do now with this new one. They're not really going to care so much about all your talk. Man, I can be Overlander guy to the Premier. I've got a hybrid engine, and I'm Overlander guy now.
We got to stop this. We got to start having a conversation realistically about how many people buy Overlanding vehicles from anybody, any company, and take the things off-road. Stop lying about it, okay? Most 4Runners are in the Kohl's Target parking lots on a Saturday. They're not out on the trail cutting it up. And so this is where the review of the newest 4Runner is like, look, man, they got all these plugs. You can plug things in when you're out on the trail. It's like, who's out on the trail? I got a mountain behind my house here in Vegas. If people were out on the trail, that place would be packed. It isn't. Right? It's the same with the Raptor guy that we have here. Oh, man, I could take this out to the sand dunes. Are you going to do that? Yeah, I think I could. 2 years later, we're trading it in. He's like, yeah, I never went out to the dunes once.
Snorkel like, guy with a Jeep. Love those guys. Yeah,
it's like, come on, man. Like, again, and everybody has to understand my point of view on cars. Buy whatever you want. Buy whatever makes you happy. Enjoy the hell out of it. Whatever. We're just talking here generally about let's all stop making this idea that all of these individuals are going to take their 4Runner and go camping way back in the woods where they need these power outlets and all these different. It's like, come on, man.
Listen, I got made fun of. I actually went ahead and bowed out of the local Jeep group because, well, I wasn't going to go do crawling and all that stuff. It just wasn't why I had a Jeep. Just like the doors off, the top off. I love to cruise around in it. But they deemed me, and it was fine. I didn't care. Like, but because I actually took pride in it. They actually told me, well, you're not a rock crawler. You're a mall crawler.
Okay.
It's like, I'm in. Yeah. Let me just have my Jeep looking nice. It looks great. I don't need to outfit it with all this crap that I'll never, ever use. I love the guys that put the gas tanks on their Jeeps. Like, what the hell are you gonna, what are you doing? Like, I could put a winch. I've got that metal bumper. I could put a winch. And, you know, there could be some reasons I might use it every 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I've never put a winch on it. Or you could just call AAA. Right? Like, I could even go to Harbor Freight and just, you know, take off all the stuff that said it was from Harbor Freight and just put $100. But I've just never even felt the need to say, hey, I'm going to put some crap on my vehicle that I'll never use.
Yeah, there's 8 Jeep owners in Utah that go rock crawling consistently. Like, let's just, and by the way, you can't buy a Jeep that rock crawls. You got to spend another $40,000 to make it into a rock crawler. So you didn't really actually buy a rock crawler. You built one.
And then you got the shake. You can't ever really drive it on the road. Like,
I know, dude. Like, look, I had 4-wheelers growing up. Actually had a 3-wheeler that got banned by the federal government, which we all had back in the day. And I had a lot of land. My family, you know, they had a farm.
Used to fly off of those, right? Oh, one wrong little move of that, you're gone.
Dude, and if you flipped it over, that muffler would burn the shit out of your leg. Dude, it was horrible. So here was the funny thing. Four-wheelers made a whole bunch of sense when I was, you know, a kid all the way to 18 because I had this farm that I could go right down the street and ride 4-wheelers. If I owned a 4-wheeler now, people would be like, why is this idiot got a 4-wheeler?
Why don't you have a Razor?
Yeah, what's he doing? Like, again, this is what I got to commend Toyota for, is they've made people believe that they're going to go take these things on the trail, never realizing that thing's going to be at soccer at 9 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. It's not going to be on the trail. And it's never been on the trail. It'll never be on the trail. And you just paid $62,000 for the Trail Hawk or Trail Night Edition or whatever the hell it's called. And Toyota deserves all the credit for that.
They wear their REI gear. They'll wear their Patagonia. Patagonia. They'll wear the stuff. Don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah. And they know a brother-in-law 4 times removed that rock crawls, and he's the one guy in their family that actually takes things off-road. But I say this, and I don't know what it means for Toyota. I'm sure they're going to sell a ton of everything because that's what they do. But when we talk about buying cars, which so many people contact us about and like these conversations, hey, man, Lexus is a better experience all the way around than the Toyota brand. And so if I can buy something with 5 or 10,000 miles on it and get myself into the price point for a new 4Runner, the no-brainer is to buy the Lexus. And let me walk you through this, Marty. You have this experience in your life because you've done business with dealerships. Sooner or later, you're going to have to take this thing in for some type of warranty, you know, a recall, whatever. So, hey, I need to have my car fixed. Toyota or Lexus is picking up the bill, so I'm going to drop it off there. They're going to fix whatever recall I have, right? Would you rather be at the Lexus dealership or the Toyota dealership? Well, let me walk people through Toyota. Dealership.
Whoa, it's got coffee. It's got fresh fruit, yogurt. Like, you got a little cookie bar. Like, what's that cookie that you put in that little oven?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that, like 100%. Big, nice, fluffy Otis Spotmeyer or something, whatever that is. Like,
yeah. Ugh. Yeah. 100%.
And some of them have yogurt bars.
Yeah. They have every, dude, we have a Lexus dealership out here that has an omelet bar. I mean, you can go in there and just enjoy yourself. And by the way, there's not as many people. So Toyota dealerships are built one way. It's for efficiency. Get people in, get people out. We sell 800 cars a month. We don't have time to fool around. It's more like a CarMax than anything. So would I rather go to a CarMax where they have like wooden stools you sit on, or go to this place that has plush leather couches that I get to hang out, and I just paid the same price for the car? But inside my car, I have a little bit of better leather. I have better center console. I have higher end stuff, and I've paid the same price. And so this to me is where a lot of people have missed the boat on Toyota. Is they haven't just thought to themselves, how do I get into the highest level of Toyota and enjoy Toyota on a different experience? Because look, man, I'm a fan of Toyota. The The Sequoia's insanely priced now. The Forerunner's insanely priced. I am much better off as a consumer because of my experience buying the Lexus with 5 or 10,000 miles on it than buying a brand new Toyota. And I think that is one of the oddest things that I've seen happen in that brand. Now, to their credit, nobody catches on to that, right? So it's not hurting them as a brand. I just, for consumers listening, just trust me, you'd much rather be at the Lexus dealership.
So you said five to 10,000. What about 20,000?
Yeah.
Where is that breaking point for you?
I mean, look, in your opinion? For me on a Lexus, again, if I'm already saying I'm going to buy the newest vehicle I can buy, yeah, man, you get above 20,000 miles. I would say, hey, look, it's getting broken in a little bit. Might have some smells in there, whatever. But you know, in 5 or 10,000 miles, nothing's really happening to those vehicles. They're usually in great shape. Nothing major's happened, right? Like, and by the way, you can just
2 or 3 years on technology. And Lexus technology versus Toyota technology's got to be better anyway.
It's identical, right? So they kind of do it identically. But just remember, at 4 years, you're at full depreciation of most vehicles. Okay, so if you're in 2023 and you buy a 2019 Lexus, you're basically at full depreciation, or what they would say, you know, full depreciation of the vehicle. And that goes for BMW or Audi or Ford or Chevy. It doesn't matter. And so if I can find a low mileage example, I think it's a no-brainer, because they've backed me into this corner. Because if I could buy a brand new 4Runner, the highest level package, and it was $50,000, and then every Lexus on the market was $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, then I have an argument. I might as well just buy the new vehicle. But if I can buy a used Lexus with the same body, you know, the same frame underneath it, a better engine usually because they've upgraded the engine, and, you know, most Lexuses are, you know, especially if you buy a used one now, they're still on the V8 system. You get a better overall experience. It's quieter. It's everything. And in some cases, when we bought our Lexus, I bought our Lexus with, I think, a couple thousand, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 miles on it. Marty, it cost me less than a brand new Sequoia. It's a way better vehicle. And I love Sequoias. It's always been one of my favorite large SUVs. But I look at it and I go, something doesn't add up to me, and I'm just going to opt for the better experience. And so when I have to take it to the dealership, if it was a Toyota dealership, I'd be taking it there. If it's a Lexus dealership, Jess is going to go. She's like, yeah, I'll go to the dealership. It's like, great, go take it. If I had to tell her to go to a Toyota dealership, she's not going there, right? But you go to Lexus, it's like she gets gourmet coffee. There's an omelet bar. There's a yogurt bar. There's some cookies. It's like a spa in that joint. So I don't know where people don't see when these brands get out of whack, and this is what we're watching from Toyota, and this is what I think is the benefit to the consumer. Toyota's out of whack a little bit and has all these SUVs priced the same. Now I can get into their luxury brand for like the same price, or in some cases, like my case, less. I'm going luxury brand because I know all of the experience and customer service is elevated at that Lexus dealership compared to the Toyota dealership. So I'm just going to take the win and go, hey, they've kind of lost their mind. I'm going to cash in on it. And that's just kind of how I feel about it.
All right. So we posed this question, right? Why are people buying less cars? Is it the way they look, which was that breakdown of the 4Runner? Or, you know, is it finances? Is it that they're still not able, you know, there's a lot of manufacturers that aren't up to the specs that they thought they could be with their production? You know, so they still have some higher prices because, you know, that's supply and demand. Well, eventually there's got to be this demand thing where supply and all this, like, is that why people aren't buying as many new cars? I mean, what is your opinion?
That I don't think people love, you know, we talked to a guy inside of our company that we work with. He's a big Audi VW guy. Robert loves them. He's bitching up and down about the redesign of the Audi S3 and those kind of things. I think there's a redesign problem. I mean, you look at the BMW redesign with that ugly front grille, You know,
is
there's
it
a
all
lot
people
of
people are trying to mirror the electrics. That's what I see. I see them trying to mirror an electric vehicle.
You know what? I like that take. I think that's a part of it. I think there's another part of it. I think some of these companies are just losing legacy inside of their company, right? Older people are retiring that have a connection to the way things, the way the brand kind of came about. You're losing some of the enthusiasts of the brand. You're seeing a lot of things that I think when you step back and you go, they aren't thinking about the car owner anymore. They're doing what's best for their brand. And that wasn't always the case, especially for a company like BMW. Okay. Especially for a company like Audi. They always had their customer in mind. When you see some of their redesigns, you're like, they're just doing it because they can, it feels like. And I think that's a really strange thing to see as somebody that's followed these brands for a long time. And, you know, I've always been an Audi fan, but right now you only buy an Audi if you love the interior. If you care about anything else, Audi really isn't that special. And I've owned RS7s and I've owned, you know, it's okay. I mean, it's a fun car, but you got to really love the interior of those cars because that's where they shine. They build probably the highest quality interior. And so I think what's happening here is, you know, talking to people and talking to a lot of people I know that are car people, they're tending to lean towards they're going to keep their cars. They're going to refurbish them or they're going to dump some money into them and they're not thrilled with it, whatever brand they like. And, you know, are prices out of control? I think that's unequivocally yes. They're completely out of control.
Everything.
I mean, they're completely out of control. And I don't know that they're ever coming back to earth. So this isn't me saying that hey, we're waiting until they fall. I don't know how many individuals I know that are just normal middle-class working people where a $65,000 4Runner makes any sense in the world. I just don't know where that makes sense. I honestly wonder, and I've said this on this podcast a number of times, are we ever going to see a manufacturer just say, you know what, man, we're going to build a $35,000 car and we're going to do it better than anybody in the world. And we're going to blow this thing out. We're going to sell so many of these units. I don't know if it's not possible for them. I don't know if their costs are so out of control that they can't do those things. Or is it they don't want to do them because they know they can sucker somebody in to these higher BS trims that don't really provide anything, and you're going to buy them anyway. And the amount of people walking around with $700, $800, $1,200 car payments for vehicles that aren't great to drive, are not high quality, are not what you would call an elite experience, more power to the manufacturers, man. You know a lot more than I do. But I don't know too many vehicles I'd be willing to pay $1,000 a month for in today's makeup of cars. I just don't know that there's that many. And it shouldn't be that way because I'm not saying this is that long ago, 5, 7, 8 years ago, there were a bunch of cars I'd be like, dude, I'd be happy to own that car. I would love that car. I like that car. I also drove another vehicle this week. An old Bentley GT, it's about 10 years old. And I got in that car and I drove it for a considerable amount of time because I had to do something for a customer in that car. And I go, this is a great freaking car. That's 10 years old. And I get to drive all the newest shit, all these exotics. And I go, you know what, man? This is a great car. Like, this feels like a Bentley, looks like a Bentley. You like driving it, right? Which is kind of the case for Bentley, you know, all the way up till they ended the W12 this year is probably the case. But it's like, I shouldn't really be thinking about that as a 10-year-old car when I get to drive all the newest shit. You know what I mean? When you get to drive all the newest stuff, you'd think you'd be like, man, this doesn't compare to this car or that car. I like this. And I'm driving that car and I'm going, like, this is one of the nicer cars I've driven in a while. And I think that's the odd experience that we are seeing some smarter consumers go, you know what, man, this stuff's not that nice. I don't have a problem paying the $68,000 for the 4Runner if I got in there and went, man, this is literally like 50% better than the last 4Runner. But if it's 3% better and I'm paying 40% more, That seems a little off. And I think that may be hitting consumers now.
So where are they getting their consumer reports then and wanting to stamp these big giant TRDs? Oh, I
know.
And...
You know where they're getting their consumer reports from? They sell out. they sell out. Like, you know, what parents used to say, there's an idiot born every minute. I mean, more power to you, man, if you enjoy the car. I just think the real enthusiast that I talk to, and I'm not talking about bitter people talking about yesteryear, I'm talking about guys driving 2017 or 2018 vehicles. They're like, I just don't like the new BMW. I went and drove it. I can afford it. I don't want it. I drove the new Audi. I don't want it. I drove the new Toyota. I don't want it. Right. That's what I'm hearing. And that's probably the first time in my life that I've ever heard. I mean, everybody always liked the newest, latest and greatest. And I think that is waning amongst a very minor percentage that Toyota and all these car companies don't care about. They want the 97% that think the latest and greatest is always better. I think if you're a little bit more of an elevated consumer now, you start to look around and go, eh.
Four cylinder?
You know. Yeah, especially when basically your V6 and your V8 are bulletproof, and you've been spending years and decades making that so awesome. I'm sure it's going to be fine. They know a lot more than you and I do. I'm certainly not a know-it-all mechanically of how they built the engines. But Toyota, you know, pairing with BMW for the Supra, now this, I'm not impressed. And I would implore anybody, if you're in the Toyota family, buy yourself a Lexus and you'll never look back. The experience is better. The service is better. Everything's better. And it's right now, it's the same price, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you're not, to me, I'm not buying an SUV to save on gas. Like, I'm buying it for the engine. Like, yep. The big surprise for me is we bought the 3-cylinder Rogue. You know, they're saying, hey, no, right, because of the turbo. That's the other problem with now having a 4-cylinder with the turbo to move this big SUV. Well, that oil's going to get hotter, right? There's going to be more maintenance that you need to do. I'm just going, why? I'm with you. Why mess with that 8 that was so good? Why mess with the 6?
Well,
to now go down to a 4.
They're under pressure, man. The EPA's on their back. They don't know how to make, in their words, they don't really know how to make the V6 and the V8 more EPA friendly. I get that some of this stuff is out of their hands. And I'm less about the engine than the fact of, when I get in a new 4Runner, I guarantee you I'm going to be like, yep, this is a 4Runner. That's not worth 30 or 40% more starting price to me, right? If I get in there and go, oh, they made 4Runner more comfortable. They made 4Runner more XYZ, right? Better. Cool, man. I'm really, really into that, and I really understand that. And again, I think that's exactly the problem that we have in all of this. And I think it's one of those things we all just need to recognize.
Yeah, definitely. So,
anyway, guys, Marshall has a problem with his microphone. And so we're going to have to end the episode because I think he unplugged his mic and screwed up the recording. So everybody send an email to Marshall@hypercleanstore.com and tell him that he needs to learn how to work a microphone. But anyway, everybody, thanks for listening. And another fun car talk. I'm sure some of you will be like, Nick doesn't know what he's talking about, but we had a lot of fun. And we'll see you guys next week.